Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour editorial interview. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service with public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on what the hell's going on here when we come back. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only upon the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of our population with a top tax rate of only 7%. Today, of course, the fears of the early opponents of that income tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top tax rate had jumped to 60%, and by the time Franklin Roosevelt was done, the top rate was over 90%, and the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time. In 1913, the average family had to work until January 30th to earn enough to satisfy the tax man at every level. This year, the average American family had to work all the way through May 12th, in order to earn enough to pay their federal, state, and local tax bills. Now, when you compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, says economist Daniel J. Mitchell, he said they only had to give the lord of the manor a third of their output, and they were considered slaves. Now, what does that make us today? This income tax and Social Security tax violate 3 of the Ten Commandments, and they violate 8 statutes of the Old Testament, the Old Covenant, and that includes our English common law. This income tax and Social Security tax are 2 criminal activities, and the income tax is the 2nd plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the 8th plank to the Communist Manifesto. And that's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for your free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Tax and status, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Hey, last time we took a look at what the hell's going on here. You ever ask yourself that question? You know, you read an article, you see something on TV, and you got to ask yourself, what is this all about? How did this come to be? Well, I got a little piece here, came across my desk. I thought I'd share it with you. It comes from a guy named William H. Calhoun. I guess Mr. Calhoun, who is an ex-Army intelligence officer, recently said to me, an invasion is taking place. Whether by means of legal or illegal immigration, the third world hordes are invading the first world nations, and they're taking no prisoners. And if this is not stopped now, America, within one generation, will be a third world sewer power. So what's being done? Well, I was at the airport recently in Los Angeles, and I could overhear the conversation of some young Indians waiting for a flight from India. These young people were obviously raised here in America, as they did not have accents, unlike their parents sitting next to them. The Indian youth, after debating their favorite rappers, began to discuss how recent DNA studies show that Indians are closely related to sub-Saharan Africans. They then began to speak approvingly of India invading California and went on to say that they should wipe out all of the whites. Now, the parents, seeing that I was listening, lightly admonished their children, not really because of what they had said, but only because others could hear what they were saying. Now, this is now the norm across America and Europe. Invaders from the Orient, Asia, Africa, Central and South America are invading the first world nations of Europe and North America, and they are intent only upon conquest. Every day, invaders from Mexico pour into the American Southwest, and they have the support of corporate backers and politicians as well. The Wall Street criminals, big business, and politicians do not care about the United States as a historical entity. They only care about the aggregate gross domestic product, even if it means the dissolution of the United States as a country. And as the aggregate gross domestic product goes up, the per capita median gross domestic product per person goes down. Average Americans are making less now when adjusted for inflation than they did back in the 1970s. And that's largely due to legal and illegal immigration. Large corporations have betrayed the United States and have sided with the third world invaders, and thus have sided against middle America. La Raza, which supports increased immigration and has the open support of Walmart and many politicians, has openly called for the extermination of the white race. Professor Jose Angel Gutierrez, founder of La Raza, has proudly said, quote, "We have an aging white America. They are dying. They are expletive deleted in their pants with fear. I love it," he said. He then went on to demand, quote, "We have got to eliminate the gringo. And what I mean by that is, if the worst comes to worst, we've got to kill him." Now, this should only be no surprise to white middle America, with the exception of a very small upper class of pure European blood. Most Mexicans are either Amerindian or mestizo, mostly Amerindian, with a few drops of Spaniard or African blood. They're not Western. Genealogically, they're Asiatic, and they despise the West. Recently, they have demanded the purging of all European elements from their math, and they have called for the removal of all white authors from their schools' reading lists. They, in fact, are children of Aztlan, intent upon Reconquista, the retaking of the Southwest. Mestizos, too, self-identify with terrorists. And we know for a fact that Mexicans are helping terrorists to sneak across the U.S.-Mexican border. And we know that many mestizo groups are in contact with terrorist cells in India, in Bangladesh. And at a soccer game in Mexico City recently, the crowd erupted in applause when a picture of Osama bin Laden was shown on the screen. Furthermore, as recently reported by the Christian Science Monitor, at least 200,000 Hispanics in the United States have recently converted to Islam, and their number is expected to increase exponentially. Now, there's a war going on, and it is the Third World Invasion of America. It will not be fought between nations, but it will be fought in backyards and parking lots across America. And loyal Americans will take up arms, and they will join militias, and they will defend their homeland. War in the streets, indeed, will be the future unless action is taken now. When the United States was invaded in the 1950s, President Eisenhower responded with Operation Wetback and deported more than 1 million Mexicans in less than a year. Our politicians today, however, say that they're unable to do that. Rather, they are unwilling, not unable. They have sided with third world invaders and big business against their fellow Americans. Some of the greatest traitors in American history are right before our very eyes. George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, John McCain, Arlen Specter, Lindsey Graham, Mike Huckabee. These miscreants have chosen Mexico, multinational political correctness, and big business over hardworking Americans, and they have betrayed the American middle class. Americans have been duped by a left-wing notion of a proposition nation, and by myths about third world assimilation, neither of which will occur or have occurred in history. Historically, nations have been built upon blood and soil, kith and kin, ancestral rights, and genealogical ties. A real nation is but an extension of a tribe, and this realization should be shared by all traditionalists, conservatives, paleo-libertarians, or patriotic liberals, union democrats, and moderates. The creedal nation, and one only has to believe in propositions to be a good citizen, is a lie. It is a Trojan horse to implement the third world invasion of America and the destruction of our nation. What can be done to stop this invasion? What are patriotic Americans to do? Become informed, be vigilant, join groups, buy arms, join militias, and prepare for potential conflict. We are under attack. Now let's take that last paragraph right there, where he said, what can be done to stop this invasion? Oftentimes, when I read an article like that, I say to myself, isn't that what we see going on in Iraq? Well, think about it for a minute. Over in Iraq, you've got a group of people, all Arabs. They all speak the same language. They're all descended from the same ancestors, but they're divided religiously between the Sunnis and the Shiites. And they're now engaged in a bloody civil war, and they're killing each other at the rate of 100 a day in Baghdad. I laugh a little. 100 a day? I mean, we Americans, we're over here with our stomachs upset because three Americans are dying over there every day. Evidently, 100 Iraqis are not as valuable as three Americans. I mean, just looking at it, one life for another, would seem like to me that three Iraqis ought to be as valuable as three Americans, or three blacks ought to be as valuable as three Chinese, or three Chinese as valuable as three Europeans. But no, I don't think that that's the way Americans see that. At least that's not what's being reported by Katie Couric and Brian Williams. Not what I'm seeing here in the recent elections. But, you know, to get back on track over here, here's these Sunnis and Shiites over here, kind of like the Catholics and the Protestants in North Ireland. I mean, these Irishmen are all the same people, same tribe. I mean, we're not talking about blacks against whites in Northern Ireland. We're talking about Irishmen against Irishmen in Northern Ireland fighting a war. They hate each other. Well, that's because one group has got the wrong religious ideology. So people divide over religion. They divide over politics. They divide over race. It's just the way life is. I didn't make it that way. I'm just a reporter reporting to you that that's the way it is. Now, when this guy gets down here on the bottom line, his last paragraph says, well, you better buy a gun and you better get ready to be killing these Mexicans because they're going to be killing you. Well, there's a cause and effect relationship here, kids. Cause and effect relationship. I thought I'd share it with you. It has to do with this thing of interracial mixing. And we Americans are the champions of interracial mixing. We have brought in people from every country in the world. I was down in Dallas here a few years back, 4 or 5 years ago, and they had a big fair down there at the fairgrounds in Dallas, and they had 200 booths manned by 200 different nationalities and ethnic origins and so on. Some of them from the same country, like India. They're divided up into 3 or 4 different ethnic groups, and they were all represented there. And the Pakistanis and the Africans and then the blacks, you know, they're down there. They got about 15, 20, 30, 40 different nationalities and ethnic groups and so on. And we brought them over here to the United States, and we're going to create this multiracial, multi-ethnic nation of people of all skin colors and all religions and all creeds and ethnic backgrounds, and we're all going to live in peace and harmony, and we're going to love each other like Katie Couric in the 6 o'clock news. And I'm telling you, kids, you got your heads right square up the middle of the rectal region where it's real dark, if you believe that. You didn't get that from your creator. You didn't get that from history. You didn't get that from your God. I don't know where you got that crap from, but that isn't where reality is located. Now, I don't deny that you people believe it and you've accepted it and you've implemented it. It's a done deal. But there's a cause and effect relationship that comes into this. And I want to share that with you because in Deuteronomy chapter 28, this is the penal clause chapter. Here's where your God comes up to you and he says, hey, Charlie, come on over here. Let me talk to you. He said, because you gave me the finger and because you wouldn't obey me and keep my commandments, here's what I'm going to do to you. It's kind of like old dad, you know. He'd come home, you know, and he'd say, now, because you didn't make your bed, and you didn't wash the dishes, and you didn't mow the grass, and you didn't take out the garbage, here's what I'm going to do to you. You ever have old dad say that to you? I had that happen to me once or twice. I was a pretty precocious kid, you know. You couldn't get me 3 or 4 times, but you could get me once. Sometimes when I was suffering from the terminal stupids, you could catch me twice. But, you know, after the old man knocked me down a couple of times, bounced me off the wall, and explained to me with pain, anguish, and suffering why it is that I had to make the bed, take out the garbage, wash the dishes, and mow the grass, I could learn how to do that pretty damn fast. I lived in the era before child abuse, when we had discipline, when we had order, when we had parental authority and parental control. We don't have that today, but I just thought I'd share with you that there was a time in America when we had that. Well, back in the olden days, our Creator told Moses, give these jerks a message from me. And he said in Deuteronomy 28:43, the stranger that is within you shall get up above you very high, and you shall come down very low. He shall lend to you, and you shall not lend to him, and he shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. Now, there's what your God said is going to come of this Mexican invasion. These people, and not just the Mexicans, but I'm talking about the Guatemalans and the El Salvadorans, and all of these people that come up here, and they form these gangs, you know, I mean, I forgot the name of the gang now, but the people from El Salvador, they came up here, and they got some kind of a nasty gang operating in Phoenix and Los Angeles that I've heard of, and they run around shooting people off of street corners. It's the custom of those people from Central America. Those people are Indians. Those are the people that you wanted to bring in here, and you did. Some of them legal and some of them illegal. These are the people that you want to hire at Swift and Company and that you want to mow your grass and that you want to work at the multinational corporation. The people that you have elected. Now, keep in mind now, kids, you people voted for Dianne Feinstein. You elected Barbara Boxer. You sent Ted Kennedy to the Congress of the United States. You elected George Bush. He didn't just get there accidentally. And it wasn't God Almighty or Moses or somebody that placed him in office. I mean, you people got out there and you voted these people into office. Now, there's another little story here that you should be aware of. It's over in Genesis chapter 11, in case you think that I'm a total racist. And I'm just a half-baked racist. Here's the real racist. It's God Almighty himself. It came at a place called the Tower of Babel. The Tower of Babel. Here's the story. The whole earth was of one language and one speech, kind of like North Ireland. The whole land of North Ireland was of one race and one speech. They all spoke English, or whatever you people over there in Ireland call that, because we Americans can't understand you. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said, well, one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and slime, and they had mortar. And they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower, whose top may reach into heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Eternal came down to see the city and the tower, which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. So go to, and let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Eternal scattered them abroad from thence, upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel or Babel, because the Lord that did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Eternal scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. I know that's a very simple, straightforward, nine-verse story. Nobody believes it, of course. Archaeologists look at that and they kind of sneer and laugh and they make fun of it. If you want to know where languages came from, there it is. And if you want to know where did men in North America came from, there it is. He just told you. I'm a reporter. I just reported what was reported to me, and there's the story. And if you like it, love it. And if you don't like it, lump it. Now, the bottom line to this is we were given an inheritance. And we Americans came over here to North America, and we conquered these Indians, and we drove them out of the land, those that God didn't kill with disease, of which he killed about 99% of them. We only killed 40,000, by the way. So if you Mexicans are mad at us, hey, listen, don't get ticked off at us. We only killed 40,000 of you. The other 16 million were killed by God himself through disease, which he said, I'll send hornets before you. I'll drive these people out. And this was our inheritance. Now, we despised our inheritance like the prodigal son. And we said, hey, listen, God, you stick it where there's no daylight, because we're not too excited about this piece of real estate called Canada or the United States or Australia or New Zealand or England. And so we're going to bring in all these Muslims to work in Europe. We're going to bring 7 million Muslims into the United States like a Trojan horse. We're going to make marriages with these Indians. I got to tell you another little part of the story here over in Deuteronomy 7. He told us not to make marriages with these people. And so, you know, we're a little smarter than God, and he doesn't know much about race and race relations, and so we're going to fix his mistake. So over here in Deuteronomy chapter 7, he starts off in verse 1. He says, when the Eternal your God shall bring you into the land where you go in to possess it, and when he has cast out many nations before you, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than you, or when you come into the United States of America, or into Australia, New Zealand, and into Canada, and he brings you in before the Arapahos, and the Cheyennes, and the Sioux, and he throws them out from before you. He said, verse 2, he said, and when the Eternal your God shall deliver them before you, and you shall smite them and totally destroy them, you shall make no treaties or covenants with them, nor show any mercy unto them. Well, he told us what to do. So we came in here to the United States, and we made 374 treaties with the American Indian tribes. That was in 1774. 1778. Got my years mixed up. 1778. 2 years after the Declaration of Independence, the Continental Congress, meeting in Philadelphia, decided that we Americans would deal with the American Indian tribes by treaty in violation of Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 2. Evidently, our Continental Congress figured that they knew more than our Creator did. I mean, that wasn't done by Bill Clinton and George Bush now. That was done by our Continental Congress clear back here long before you and I were born. I just wanted to point out that this rebellion against our God isn't something new. We've been doing this for a long time. And they kind of sowed the seeds here for a future penalty or a future destruction. But in verse 3, he went on another step further, and he said, and you shall make, neither shall you make marriages with them. Your daughter you shall not give unto his son, and nor his daughter shall you take unto your son. For they will turn away your son from following me, that they may serve other gods. So will the anger of the Eternal be kindled against you and destroy you suddenly. All right, so he said, now don't make any marriages with these Indians. Don't give your daughter to that Sioux Indian kid over there. And don't you let that Sioux Indian girl over here marry your son. I mean, you talk about a racist now. I'm talking about the Creator of the universe, who is the world's number one racist. This isn't the sweet Jesus that you heard about in church last Sunday. I'm talking about the Creator of the universe. Now, he separated the peoples of the earth back in Genesis chapter 11, and he said, this piece of real estate belongs to the Iraqis, and this piece of real estate belongs to the blacks. He gave Africa to the blacks, and Asia to the Asians, and Europe to the whites. And he said, now, let's keep your estate. Don't make marriages with these other people over here. Now, we Americans, we've got our nose so far out of joint that it's an embarrassment. We've got our noses stuck into 127 countries around the world. That's where we have troops, not just in Iraq and Afghanistan. Hell, we've got troops in Japan and Korea, in England and France and Germany. I mean, we've got our troops everywhere in the world. And we're over here dictating to these people, and we're kind of muscling in, and we're kind of telling these people how to run their governments. And we're very interested in the oil there in the Middle East. I got a letter here from a young fella. He's an Arab. And we'll cover that one next. But I wanted to point out over here, before we get to this young Arab who sent me a letter and said, hey, listen, I'm kind of curious about your views here on Israel and Palestine and Jews and so on. Before we get into that, I thought I would share with you here that we have an invasion going on in America, in which this fella says that what we need to do is to get our guns, and we're going to go out here and buy arms and join militias. And I'm sitting here saying, honest to God, do you people think that you're going to arm yourselves and that you're going to join militias and that you're going to defend yourself against this curse that comes from God Almighty himself? Huh? Have you taken leave of your senses? I mean, you know, it's all right by me. But it would seem like to me that this is already a done deal. We're not talking about. This is something that you need to avoid. This isn't 1960, and we need to avoid this new Immigration Act of the Kennedy administration, which was enacted in 1963, which is the roots of our problems now in 2006. Boys and girls, this is a done deal. You've already got these Trojan horses all over America. And the stranger that's within your gates, boys and girls, is going to bring you down very low. That's a penalty. That's a punishment that we're all going to get that dates back to 1778 when we said we're not going to follow the instructions of our God, but we are going to have integration. We are not going to have segregation. We are not going to have race separation. We are going to amalgamate the races. Well, hell, that's what they were doing back in Genesis chapter 11. God said, I ain't putting up with that. And we said, well, God, we don't care what you think you're not going to put up with. We're going to do it anyway. Well, okay, we did it. Now, I would suggest that we come down off our high horse and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop giving him the damn finger. I don't think that's going to pay off in the long run, but don't let me get in the way now of your happiness and success, kids. If you want to take up arms, now go chase all these Mexicans. Back to Mexico, get after it. But I think you're going to tick them off in the process. Now, there's a logical solution to this, and it starts with a couple of three examples. I won't give you a long-winded sermon here because I ain't a preacher, but if you go back and take a look at Sodom and Gomorrah, once the die had been cast, there came a point in time when the destruction of those two cities was inevitable. There wasn't anything that you were going to do or I was going to do or anybody else was going to do to save 100,000 people in those two cities. There were four survivors that came out of those two cities. There were four righteous men in the two cities. Well, there was one guy named Lot and his wife and two daughters. And so he moved those four righteous people out of the city and destroyed all the rest of them. There was another example in about 1 Kings chapter 18 or 19 where Elijah, and he was complaining that he was the last guy in Israel and that he was practicing the law nobody else was. And Big Mike came and said, no, before we destroy Israel, we'll preserve the 7,000 that have not bowed their knee to Baal. And he'll save those 7,000. I would imagine here in America there's 7,000 or 70,000 that haven't bowed their knee to Baal, and God will preserve those 70,000 that obey God and keep his commandments. The rest of you people out there, put your head between your knees and kiss her goodbye. You know, there's a limit. Old Dad's a pretty good guy. You know, our God's not really a bad guy, but he's got a limit. And when he hits the limit, he goes ballistic, like he did with the Egyptians in the Red Sea. Killed them all. Like Sodom and Gomorrah. Killed them all. And we Israelites have been in national captivity and out of national captivity and into national captivity and out of national captivity numerous times in our history. You can go back 3,000 years, boys and girls, we've been through this drill over and over and over and over again. And we're about to go through it again. We haven't learned anything from the history of the past, and we're about to learn firsthand how to reinvent the wheel. So now there's a couple of three examples for you. Now, if you want to be on the winning side, then you need to start obeying God, keeping his commandments, and being one of the survivors, one of the guys that he's going to protect. And that's the last straw in this game. That's the last straw in this bale. You're not going to save America. You're not going to save Canada. This country and Canada and Mexico are going to be merged into the North American Union, and you're going to have a new currency called the Amero, and you're going to have Mexicans living next door to you whether you like it or not. That's just where reality is located. So grow up and get real. This is what's coming. The stranger that's within your gates, children, is going to rise up high above you and bring you down very low. Who said that? It wasn't George Gordon. Hell, I wasn't smart enough to figure that out, but your God did. Hey, listen, I got to give you a reminder here before we get on any further here, and that is that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, and business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. 8 schools total. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through our website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers and newsletters to our listener. And these endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors and publications endorse us or are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, or they're religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not endorsed by the Law Hour editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our this network or the local radio station or the advertisers or the sponsors. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, recently, I just received a letter the other day from a young fellow. I say young man, I don't know how old the guy is, didn't tell me, but I'm assuming it's a young man. From the tone of the letter, a young man who is a Muslim, I presume he is an Arab. I'm not going to tell you what his name is, but his first name is Imad, I-M-A-D, and his name sounds pretty Arabic to me. And he said, I recently stumbled upon your website, and I'm pleased to say that I'm very encouraged by the topics that you speak about on your radio broadcast. I'm not a Christian, but a Muslim, and I value the code of ethics that you follow greatly, and many are a part of my faith. The subject of the last age, that is the pre-return of Jesus, and I'm going to underline that, has deeply impacted my heart in recent months. Maybe it's the ongoing war in the Middle East that has finally opened my eyes, the famine in Africa, the dramatic climate change, the frequency of earthquakes, tsunamis, hurricanes, or the breakdown of urban society that I see all around me. My greatest fear of all, though, is of a greater war in the Middle East, a crusade of our time. Now, I'm a student of imperial geopolitics and the global economy at Ohio State University, and I believe that soon enough we will witness a terrible war for the control of the Middle East oil, in conjunction with a war in which Israel will drastically enlarge its boundaries to those mentioned in the Bible, the Euphrates to the Nile. Now, we both know that today's global economy still rallies around the dollar due to its relation with black gold. Most certainly, we can say if the United States does not control this strategic interest, its currency will be doomed, bringing forth horrendous consequences to the common population of the United States. Is it possible that if the United States were to fall as a superpower, we would fall to Israel as being the controller of oil and water, meaning that the succession of superpower status is now transferred to Israel? Is there any mention of this in biblical prophecy? I make this assumption on the fact that if we are truly living in the last age, the following would have to occur. So I'm going to underline the word Israel here. Transferred is now transferred to Israel. The Israelites, and I'm going to underline the word the Israelites, would have to return to the Holy Land. Somehow they would have to establish Jewish rule, I'm going to underline Jewish rule in the Holy Land, and the state of Israel would have to rule the world like the Golden Age witnessed during David and Solomon's time. Now, keeping these three points in mind, according to Islamic theology, this is the age in which the Antichrist will appear. In Arabic, it equals Dajjal, D-A-J-J-A-L. I'm going to assume that that's pronounced Dajjal. Or the false Messiah. I'm going to underline that also, the false Messiah. The literal translation of the word means deception, and we're told that the Dajjal will be a person who will impersonate the true Messiah, Jesus. I'm going to underline the true Messiah, Jesus. His mission is to deceive humanity into believing that he is Jesus, and I'm guessing that he will control the world from the throne of David and Solomon from Jerusalem. I'm going to underline Jerusalem. Do you have any thoughts on this type of scenario? Being a Muslim, I hold strong to the values taught in the Bible and the Torah, praying, fasting, regular acts of charity, the Ten Commandments, and I agree with you that when natural disasters occur, they are truly a sign from God. I'm very interested about your thoughts on this subject. So I thought I would answer that question in this letter at the same time that we talk about this thing of race, because no, race is not politically correct. A few things that we don't like to talk about is race and religion and politics, and you know, it causes a lot of heartache and a lot of problems and controversy, and so we steer away from it. God in the Bible has given us a pretty good direction, I think, along that line. Now, it's against the law to discriminate against people. So let's understand something. This comes under what's known as the Stranger's Statute. So if you were to look this up in a concordance, or if you looked it up in my book, The Mosaic Law, under the word stranger, you would find that the strangers, that is, the Muslims that are within our land, it's against the law to oppress those people. It's called the Stranger Statute. God told us, he said, you were a stranger in the land of Egypt, and I rescued you out of that land. Now, how does that fit in? I mean, if we're not supposed to discriminate, if we're not supposed to oppress strangers within our land, then what do we do with all these 7 million Muslims that are over here? The answer is, you don't bring the 7 million Muslims over here to start with. I know it's a wild new concept, but you don't bring them here to start with. And then the second thing you do is you stay the hell out of the Middle East. You stay the hell out of Iraq. You keep your nose in your own business. and you leave the Arabs in Iraq, in Arabia, with all of their oil, because it's their oil, and you don't steal it like we Americans have been doing over the past 100 years. It's a wild new concept for Americans and Israelites as a general branch of humanity, but out of other people's business. And you'd find that those Arabs would have all that oil, and they wouldn't have democracy, and we wouldn't be real concerned about Osama bin Laden. And I don't think Osama bin Laden would be real concerned about Americans. In 1853, there was no jihad or holy war against America. The Arabs were still living over there in Iraq and in Arabia and doing their thing, and we weren't messing with them, and they weren't messing with us. And you know, if you don't mess with people, they don't mess with you. But this young man here, now, I'm assuming is an Arab. If you're not, then I apologize. I'm just going to make the assumption. Sounds kind of Arabic to me. And he's a Muslim. Now, the Muslims are called heathen. Then in Jeremiah 10, I'm going to read it to you directly here. Jeremiah 10, God told us how to deal with these heathen. Not that that heathen is necessarily a bad word, per se, but it's a group of people over here that do not practice our religious ideology or our viewpoint. This includes Christians, Buddhists, Muslims, and all the rest of these people. Speaking from the point of view of the Bible, now you Christians can be offended if you want to, but Christians are pagans. Christians are heathens. Christians do not practice the law of God. Christians are pig-eaten Christians. Hebrews don't eat pig. And just to make you feel a little bit better, Muslims don't eat pig either. So the Muslims practice righteousness. You know, in a lot of regards or a lot of ways, the Muslims practice the Ten Commandments. They don't steal. They have very stringent laws against people that steal, and they resent Americans stealing their oil. And they practice thou shalt not commit adultery, and they're very offended at our adulterous, filthy, perverted, sodomy lifestyle. Christians aren't, but Muslims are. Now here in Jeremiah chapter 10, he says, hear ye the word which the Eternal speaks unto you, O house of Israel. Thus saith the Eternal, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. So our God told us not to learn the way of the heathen, to keep ourselves separate. He told us we're a peculiar people. He gave us an inheritance. We despised our inheritance, brought all the heathen in, and we just can't learn how to practice these heathen practices and customs well enough. We introduce them into our churches and into our society, into our culture. God, we just love it. We're like a dog rolling in a dead, rotten fish on the bank. We just can't roll in that filth and slime enough. And so that's what we're doing. Now, this young man is talking about the return of Jesus. And I got to make a comment here, because Jesus is not the Messiah. I just wanted to tell you that since you're looking at the Dajjal, or the false Messiah, this false Messiah is spoken of in the book of Revelation. Just take a look at Revelation 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, along in there, and you'll see a lot spoken of there, Imad, or Emad, spelled I-M-A-D, Imad. You'll see a lot spoken of there about the false prophet and the false Messiah. And yes, Moses had a lot to say about this in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Daniel had a lot to say about it in his book called the Book of Daniel. And John had a lot to say about it in the Book of Revelation. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, or Matthew, Mark, and Luke all had something to say about it. It's Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21, combined with Revelation 7 through 17. And Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26 tells you a hell of a story. Now, for common purposes, we use the name Jesus here in America and in Western civilization to identify this God, because it's the only name that we know. It's the name that I learned when I went to Lutheran church. But I want to point out to you that that's not his name. And in Matthew chapter 1, the angel told Mary that his name was Emmanuel, or God with us. That's his name. Now, we have some other names called Yahweh or Yahshua or Yahshua, or however you want to pronounce it, that are closer to his name, not Jehovah, not Jesus, not Christ. Those are pagan, heathen names. And you brought up the subject matter of the Israelites and Israel and the Jews as if they're synonymous. So let me share with you another little piece to the riddle over here, Imad. And you'll see this in Revelation 2, verse 9. I'm going to flip to it and read it to you. I didn't write this. I'm going to show you that it's not my fault, so don't blame me. Don't write me an email and say that I'm a dirty, no good, low-down so-and-so. I already knew that. Revelation 2, verse 9, he says, I know your works in tribulation and poverty, but you are rich, and I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. Did you catch that? Here's God speaking to us in the year 2006 from the perspective of Revelation 2, verse 9. And he says, I know the blasphemy of those that say they are Jews. Now, I'm at the people of America do not call themselves Jews, and to my knowledge, never have. The people of England, Ireland, and Scotland do not call themselves Jews. The only people that I know of that call themselves Jews are that group of people They're called Ashkenazi Jews, and there's another name for them. There's Ashkenazis and the Sephardim Jews. And most of them today reside, there's 15 million of them around the world. You know, there's 26 million Iraqis. 26 million. And there's only half as many Jews worldwide. 15 million or thereabouts. Of which 5 million of them live in Israel and 5 million of them live in New York City. Which means there's only 5 million scattered around all the rest of the world, if that's the case. In Revelation 3, verse 9, listen to this. Here's God again, twice now. Two chapters, twice. He says, because you have kept the word of my patience, I will also keep you from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the world to try them and to dwell upon the earth. Now, who is he speaking to? Well, this is the patience of the saints. And this word patience is the commandments of God. See Revelation 14, 12. So take Revelation 3, 10. And go over to Revelation 14, 12, and 14, 12 will show you what the word patience means. It means keeping the commandments of God, which is what I told you before. Taking up arms and going out here and killing all of the Mexicans in the country over here is a fool's errand. Children, that isn't going to happen. God Almighty himself is bringing this plague, this locust plague of strangers upon us, facilitated by our own rebellion against our Creator. Now go to verse 9. This is Revelation 2, 9 and Revelation 3, 9. Listen to this. He says, behold, I'll make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not. Who are these people in Israel today that say they are Jews? Who are these 15 million people around the world today that say they are Jews and are not Jews? Who are these people? Going on, he says, I will make them to come and worship before your feet and to know that I have loved you. There's a big controversy between the Arabs and the Jews over here in Palestine. So let me go back and tell you the story. These people that call themselves Jews today and are not Jews, who primarily have this piece of real estate called Israel, are Edomites. They are the descendants of Esau. And our great-great-great-granddaddy Jacob stole Esau's birthright. And the descendants of Esau, about 15 million of them, have been mad as hell ever since, and they're in a process, have been in the process, have been working hard for the last 4,000 years to get that inheritance back. That's what the conflict is all about. You're not going to have peace in the Middle East. You're going to have war. And so this young man, Emad, says, I'm really concerned about a broader war in the Middle East. Well, you're exactly correct. There's going to be a broader war in the Middle East. But these people over here in Israel are not going to be the people who are going to be the golden age of David and Solomon. These people are going to be the curse of the Edomites. They are going to be the greatest curse that foments Jacob's trouble or the Great Tribulation, a time that the Messiah, not Jesus now, but the Messiah, in Matthew 24 said there's never been a time like it. He said that not even Noah's flood is going to compare to this time called the Great Tribulation. That's in Matthew 24. I didn't write that. I'm just reporting what the author said. So I said, well, okay, let me report that. Maybe he's a liar. Maybe he doesn't know what he's talking about. Maybe he's a deceiver. But it seemed like to me that he seems to be laying it out pretty accurately. Now, these people over here in Israel are not Jews. They're Edomites. And there's a book out here written by a guy by the name of Koster called The 13th Tribe. It's quite a little story there. I won't have time to quote from it or to give you a lot of information concerning Koster over here. If you want, write to me and I'll give you more information. The return of the Messiah, it looks like to me, is getting closer and closer. Well, every day that goes by brings him one day closer. But what we're seeing in the world today with global warming, this war escalating in the Middle East, the disaster that's coming upon America, the invasion that's coming upon us, the stranger that's rising within our gates and bringing us down very low, our standard of living, it says to me the Great Tribulation is underway. That's the signal that I get, Ahmed. And you're exactly correct. When you say, hey, I think that there's a bigger, broader war coming in the Middle East, you bet there is. And what are we fighting over? Your oil. We are over there to steal your oil. We're not over there to bring democracy to Iraq. That's crap. We're over there to steal 25% of the world's oil. Think about it. We Americans control Saudi Arabia. We control 35% of the world's oil in Saudi Arabia. We control the price of oil through dollars. All oil is being traded in dollars until Saddam Hussein decided that he was going to trade oil in euros and that he would not join the International Monetary Fund. And that's why we went to war in 1990. And now we're over there to take Iraq's oil, and that's 25%. Now take 35 and 25, boys and girls. 35 and 25, that's 60% of the world's oil. Now let's add the Emirates and Kuwait, and then Iran's got 10% of the oil. 70% of the world's known oil reserves are right there in Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran, Kuwait, and the Emirates. 70%. There's just two guys standing in the road, and that's the Iraqis and the Iranians. The total oil hegemony worldwide, and the Americans are after it. And from our point of view, geopolitically, we need it. And you're exactly right. Without it, the dollar collapses, and America collapses right along with the dollar. It's a geopolitical ploy. It's a move. It's a theft. And here's the tragedy of it all for those of us that didn't know this. Up in Canada, you Canadians are sitting on 3 trillion barrels of oil. Did you know that? In Alberta alone, in the oil sands. 3 trillion barrels. That's 3 times more oil than all the oil in the Middle East combined. That's 3 times more than all of the known oil reserves in the world combined. You Canadians have it. And we Americans are in the process of stealing that from you with this new united, this North American union of the United States and Canada and Mexico. Now that we're broke, now that we have deceived you, now that we have lied to you and cheated you and given you all of these dollars, we're going to renege on those dollars because we can't pay off these debts. So we're going to merge Mexico, Canada, and the United States into one nation and steal your oil. And the same thing with you Mexicans. You see, you guys are sitting on top of a tremendous oil reserve down there, and we Americans need it. That's what the bottom line is. We need your oil, so we're going to merge you with the United States. To hell with Mexican culture. To hell with Canadian culture and the Canadian nation. To hell with Americans and the American nation. We are going to combine that with our fascist government and our corporations and take the oil. That's the bottom line. I know it's a hell of a tragedy, but you know, that's the way life is. Life is a tragedy. But I thought I would report that to you so that you'd get a little better handle on what the hell's going on around us. And then here's the final irony. We Americans are sitting on oil shale, not tar sands, but oil shale. We've got more than you Canadians. 3.6 trillion barrels of that oil sits here in America. And we're over here fighting in Iraq, killed 650,000 Iraqis to steal their oil. And those Iraqis have 130 billion barrels. And we have 3.6 trillion barrels, just about 36 times more oil sitting here in America than the Iraqis, and we're over there stealing their oil in the name of democracy. Oh my God, give me a break, would you? Hey, I'm about out of time. I got to give you a final reminder and tell you that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through our website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.